Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and a very warm welcome to the program Productive Muslima. So a month ago, I interviewed Zada Mohammadi, a life coach and body talk practitioner, and we spoke about finding our purpose in life. You know, we had such amazing feedback and so many requests to speak about the topic again. So alhamdulillah, we have Zaida Mohammadi again to enlighten us more about this topic. There's so much to speak about, and personally, it's a topic I'm super passionate about. So I was very glad to oblige. So let us welcome Zaida Mohammadi. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to Radio Islam International.
Wa alaikum salam. Thank you so much for having me on.
Zaida, you know, when we spoke last month, we spoke about finding our purpose, and you said that it was a journey, but that unfolds slowly throughout life. You don't just find your purpose. And in order to find your purpose, you have to let go of fear and find your worthiness. You have to be self-aware. You have to be honest with yourself. So we spoke about that, and now I thought, you know, we should maybe concentrate more on the negative emotions, because in order to find our purpose, we obviously have to get rid of the negative emotions and find our own worthiness.
Yes, definitely. You know, finding our purpose sometimes can feel like a complicated thing, but it's inherent in all of us. I think the main thing is that many of us fall into the trap of wanting to find our purpose in order to prove ourselves, to prove that we're worthy, to show the world that we're enough. So we think, okay, if I find my purpose and I follow that, then I'll suddenly prove to everyone that I'm good enough and that I'm worthy enough. And sadly, this never works, because then we're trying to find our purpose from a very ego-driven place, not from a heart-driven place. So what other people think about you becomes more important, and then this is a very fear-based space to be in. And being in a fear-based space is not the place where your purpose can organically and easily unfold. I think an important thing to remember, Surya, is that your purpose is something that's bigger than you. When you understand this, when you have developed self-worth outside of what you do, when what you do does not hold the heavy burden of needing to prove to yourself and the world that you are a worthy human being, then you are far more open to what your purpose really is. So like you mentioned, it comes down to this, of doing your internal work, working through your fears, your insecurities, your limiting beliefs, building a positive outlook, also developing your spiritual connection. All of these things raises what we call your emotional intelligence. And you will find throughout the world, people who are very successful, the research actually shows that emotional intelligence, or EQ, is a greater predictor or indicator of success than IQ. So it's not about how intelligent you are, it's about how emotionally intelligent you are. And this will all help you on your path to finding your purpose. For those who may be struggling with depression or struggling in this any way, does this mean that you have to become a perfect, flawless version of yourself in order to find your purpose? No, not at all. To the contrary, working through these issues, working through these struggles will give you exactly the tools that you need to discover your potential and your purpose. To be honest, Surya, I actually found this work through a debilitating chronic illness. It was a massive struggle, but the inner work and the healing journey that challenge led me to, it gave me the exact tools that I need in order to discover my purpose. So an important thing for your listeners to realize is that your difficulties are not hindering you. They're not preventing you from getting to your purpose. Actually, you'll find that in working through your difficulties with courage and sincerity, these can actually be guideposts to your purpose. So in short, the first step to finding your purpose would be to raise your emotional intelligence, to work on your awareness and personal growth, and to remember that the current difficulties that you are facing give you actually the opportunity to do exactly that.
Right. And, you know, you touched a bit on you finding your purpose through a chronic illness, right? And I remember that at the end of the program last month, we didn't have much time. But you did say that you found a sanctuary within yourself, and you used to retreat to that place, and that helped you go through this whole, help you through the chronic illness. So I wanted to know, how did you know that there was a sanctuary there, or how did you come to realize that you had to do this, or you had this coping mechanism within you?
Well, truly, I think at the time it was probably Allah's guidance, because it's not something that I knew for sure. But what I did know is at the time I was very much in survival mode. And the emotions that I was feeling, the negativity, the fear, the doubt that I was feeling was overwhelming. And so just as a survival mechanism, I just retreated within myself. And the way that I did it, honestly, was just to go back to a time where I felt really happy, where I felt safe, where I felt protected. And this actually, I didn't realize at the time, now I understand it better, but I was using my mind to stimulate neurons that would release endorphins and happy hormones, which are ideal for helping you to heal into my system and into my brain. So this is quite interesting. However, I didn't get a chance to mention this the last time, and I do want to make sure that this comes across to listeners. At the time, even though I retreated into my safe place, Surya, months later, all of that emotional baggage, it came back to haunt me. I didn't just run away from it. And so it also, I had to be very honest and very sincere with myself and face all of that head on. And that is when the real emotional journey started.
Oh, wow. You know, that's actually amazing. I find that amazing because it's something that you didn't actually, like, go and learn. It's something that just happened to you. So, sure, that is very interesting. Now, what about your negative emotions, right? You say that, okay, you obviously have dealt with yours. And alhamdulillah, Allah has given you the capability to deal with it. Now, what about people who have so much of negativity within them? They want to find their purpose in life, but they just don't know how to start altering their outlook of life, or, you know, where you look at things negatively, you need to alter it, but you don't know where to start. Okay, I think we lost Zaida there. We'll try and get her on, inshallah. Let's just give her a few minutes. The engineer will get her online. What I find very interesting about this whole development is that you as a person have to have, you have to be in touch with your emotions so that you can actually be aware of what is negative within you, if that makes sense. And when you suddenly realize or understand these things, to understand the negative emotions, that is when you can go ahead and you can deal with it head on. But then the thing is that lots of people don't even know how to begin, and that is where we need people to do this for us. Let's see if we can get Zaida back on. Zaida, are you back on?
I am here. Okay, so you asked the question about how to begin changing your outlook. You did say that, you know, I've worked through my negative emotions. Actually, today I'm a human being. I also have negative emotions sometimes. It is a process. But I'm going to share with you how you would start beginning to alter your outlook. And the simple answer is one thought at a time. So think of negativity like a habit, a limiting habit or a bad habit. So when you're trying to quit any bad habit, like, say, for example, smoking or comfort eating, there'll be a combination approach that you have to use if you want long-term lasting results. So the first thing that you would do is to examine what is the underlying cause of the habit. So in the instance of the smoker, it may be stress management, diverting your attention, etc. When it comes to negative thinking, there may actually be a trigger for you. For instance, I've actually found in some clients, it's actually a learned behavior that they picked up from their upbringing, or it's something that they use as a self-protective mechanism. So for instance, you tell yourself that in order to avoid being hurt, I'll always expect the worst in any situation. So the underlying need for the destructive habit of negative thinking is different for everyone. This does take a little bit of digging, and you do need to have quite a bit of self-honesty to do this. You may want to, you know, the listeners may want to engage the assistance of a life coach or a therapist, or even somebody that you respect, a role model that you look up to. The second part of it, Surya, is consciously redirecting your thoughts. So in the case of the smoker, for example, initially it will be so difficult. He'll suffer from withdrawal symptoms, physical symptoms. So in the beginning, choosing positive thoughts will require a lot of effort from you, but with time this will become easier. Research shows that it takes up to 60 days to change a habit. To give you an example, For all of us who have learned to drive, in the beginning it was so difficult to learn how to drive. You know, you have to keep your focus on the road, the other cars, you have to make sure you push the clutch in at the right time, that you indicate. There's like a million different things that you have to think about. However, over time it became easier. Now you can probably get yourself from point A to B without much conscious thought about it. So this is because it has now been laid into the neural pathways. It has become habit. Just like that, if you keep practicing choosing positive thoughts, in the beginning it will be hard. You'll have to keep on consciously making an effort. But over time, those neural pathways will be laid down. So do give yourself time. It is a process. And like anything, keep practicing, keep consistent, and the results will pay off. As I said, once those neural pathways have laid down, it will become much easier to adopt a positive mindset.
So in other words, like, first start doing it consciously, and then later on it will just happen automatically.
Yes, later on what you'll actually find is when you have negative thoughts, it will just feel so wrong to you. You'll immediately catch yourself out, whereas in the beginning you need to keep watching yourself and watching those thoughts.
Okay, but sometimes, Zaira, you know, it's not as easy as something like a negative thought. You know, it's not something you can just control. Sometimes it's such a strong emotion that it overpowers you in such a way that you don't know how to act. Or maybe it overpowers you in a way you're in a gathering or you're in a group, and without actually giving yourself time to adjust to the situation or to deal with it, you already react, and by then it's too late. For example, right, an extra sensitive person. You get those personalities that are so sensitive, if you have to say something, a normal or a different personality type would take it differently. But a person who's extra sensitive starts getting more emotional about it and taking it so personally. How do these personality types go about dealing with things like this?
Okay, so according to what I've experienced in working with clients, Surya, yes, you do get some people who are more sensitive than others. I actually come across them in practice. You know, these are people who are more in tune with the environment, more in tune with the energy around them. Children can often be like this. But I think what you're talking about is people who overreact. Am I correct in assuming this?
Yes.
Okay. So it has less to do with a personality type and more to do with our wiring or our outlook. It's more to do with the meanings that we attach to experiences and our own self-concept and our emotional intelligence. There's actually a very interesting branch of research around this where they say before you respond to anything, you should wait at least six seconds before you respond. And the reason for that is there's a certain flood of neurochemicals in your brain which actually cause you in the beginning, in those first six seconds, to respond from what we call the reptilian impulse. It's that very defensive, that very aggressive brain, the one that wants to think the worst of other people. It's that knee-jerk reaction. So, it comes down to people who take things personally, generally I find have a more negative self-concept. They struggle with their self-worth, and many times because of this, they attach meanings to what is said and what is done to them that are not even true. I'll give you an example, okay? I would like to use the example of Mary. Now, Mary, she grew up in a family. She was fairly attractive, nothing so bad about her, but maybe she was a little bit chubbier than her sister, but her sister was always, you know, was told that she was the more beautiful one. And Mary felt quite sidelined by her sister. She felt less attractive than her sister. She felt frumpier. She felt fatter than her sister. In all honesty, Mary was quite attractive, but because she had this thinking in her and everyone kept pointing out how attractive her sister was, it became part of her wiring, part of her belief systems, and it really knocked her self-esteem and her self-worth down. So now Mary grows up, she has an office job, and she's sitting at work the one day, and one of her colleagues walks in and says, Mary, you look absolutely beautiful in that color today. That color of that jersey looks stunning on you. Immediately, what this person is saying does not fit in with Mary's belief system. So Mary will actually do something that we call, I think I touched on it last time as well, deletion, distortion, or generalization. So either she'll delete it completely and say, oh, you know what, she didn't mean it, she was just trying to be nice. Or she'll generalize it, she'll say, oh no, this person says that to everyone, she didn't really mean it. Or she'll distort it based on her own insecurity, she'll say, she's just trying to be so sarcastic and funny with me, she's actually trying to manipulate me, she wants me to do some work of hers. And then she starts having a conflict with this person. You can see how this leads to so much unnecessary conflict. In this instance, yes, Mary would be being extra, would be acting extra sensitive and overreacting, but that's because of her belief system and her insecurities. We do it to other people and they do it to others. The best we can do is to clear what we call our own filters, to do our inner work, so we can filter our experiences less negatively than Mary did, hopefully, inshallah.
Okay, that's interesting. So when you say wait 6 seconds, is this when you feel that maybe the statement is going to affect you? Is that like a general rule?
You know what, it's just a general rule. This is a much more in-depth topic than what we're touching on here, because really when somebody triggers us in any way, so when I'm saying 6 seconds, I'm talking about the trigger with, let's just say somebody says something. So in that instance, someone said that to Mary. If Mary immediately reacted, she might have told him something not very nice. In waiting the 6 seconds, they say 6 seconds, but to be honest, Surya, I would say if somebody is triggering you, from my experience, I would take a deep breath in and out and do some inner reflection before I even said anything back. So if something is really triggering us, take a deep breath in and just assess what's going on in your body. What are the emotions that are rising up? And from there, start to decide whether or not you want to respond and how you want to respond. Because chances are that initial gut knee-jerk reaction is not going to be a very pleasant one, and it's coming from our own fears.
Yes, definitely. But I think maybe that's easier said than done, because at that moment, the emotions are so strong that even to think about breathing is going to be difficult. Am I right?
Yes. Yeah, that's true. But, you know, to be honest, I find, Surya, with inner work or emotional intelligence, there's no quick fix sometimes. It does require work and it does require effort on our part. So if you're going into a situation where you know there may be people that are going to trigger you, maybe you have that one particular person who always rubs you up the wrong way, make sure you've prepared yourself mentally before you've gone in. And also take some time to just assess and do some inner work around it, because if there's a person who's constantly triggering you, who's constantly making you feel insecure, inadequate, you need to do some self-reflection and inner work around this.
Yes, definitely. And so if you are generally, like if you are an extra sensitive person, would you say this personality can be altered?
Like I said, I don't know if it's so much a personality type as an outlook. For most of the time, like I said, I find the people who are sensitive, and some of us, you know, we all fall into this category sometimes, myself included, Surya. Sometimes you have a situation that happens, somebody says something or they do something, and it's really hurtful. So how do you deal with it? How do you deal with, no matter how much inner work you do, sometimes somebody comes along and does or says something that's just deeply, deeply hurtful for you. So I'm going to give you a step-by-step, I'm going to give the listeners a step-by-step process. Should I go into it now?
I think we'll leave that for after the break, because I'm
sure
that would be better. But I just wanted to cover like whether it can be something that's changed, you know, that can be altered.
Yeah, we can definitely work with that. And actually, after the break, I will share with you what are some of the tools that you can use if you do fall into that category. And I think, as I said, Surya, I think we all fall into that category from time to time.
I think so, too. There's certain times we can admit to being extra sensitive, but sometimes you come across people who are generally extra sensitive. Like, or maybe you're just a person that that may not think about it that deeply, that it's hurting someone else. And, you know, you find other people that are extra sensitive, and then you feel, ah, she's being so sensitive. You know, what's the big deal? Everyone else would laugh about it. But maybe sometimes we also need to introspect, or maybe have our ear to the ground a bit more.
Yeah, I think on both sides of the fence, it requires, like you said, a little bit more introspection and thinking about what we're doing and what we're saying and how it affects people. But at the end of the day, no matter what your intention is, you know, you can have the best of intentions in your interaction. How somebody else takes what you say is largely out of your control. There's a lovely book that your readers might be interested in. I don't know if you've heard of it, Surya. It's called The Four Agreements.
No, never heard of it.
I haven't heard of the agreements. Okay, so it's called The Four Agreements. It's by somebody called John Miguel Reyes. I don't know if you have somewhere where you can put the author down, but It's called the Four Agreements, and the Four Agreements is kind of like a manifesto for how you can interact in your relationships and in your life. And one of them is don't take anything personally. And he goes into great detail explaining how, even though you may have the best of intentions towards other people, how people filter what you say and what you do has very little to do with you and everything to do with their own filters. Like in the instance of Mary, I mean, that woman might have had the best of intention and wanted to give her an honest compliment, and she might have honestly felt that Mary looked good that day. How Mary chose to take it was based on Mary's perception. So I think also sometimes when we say things and people take it the wrong way, we need to be very honest with ourselves and ask ourselves, what was my intention for saying it? And if you felt your intention was clear and your intention was good and that person still had a reaction, a way to deal with it may be to realize that how they're reacting has more to do with their own stuff than anything to do with you. So Donegal even says that everyone is living their own dream, and that's from our forces of perception, like I explained, I think, in our last talk as well.
Yes, most definitely. Okay, Zada, I think we can go for a quick break, and then when we get back, I would love to get into the pointers that you have for us about how to deal with it. So listeners, stay with us. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome back to the program, Productive Muslima. We're chatting to Zada Mohammadi, life coach and body talk practitioner. So before the break, Zada, you spoke to us about sensitivity, being extra sensitive, and you were going to get us through a list of how to deal with it.
Yes. Okay, so this would apply to people who see themselves as sensitive, but also people who see themselves as not so sensitive and you see yourself as a strong person. So if somebody is affecting you by their actions or by their words, you find that they trigger you, they trigger negative emotions in you, do you respond? How do you respond? Okay. First, I just want to take a look, Surya, at this word strong. What does it mean to be strong? And I'd like the listeners to do some introspection after this and ask themselves, what does it mean to be strong? Does strong meaning not feeling emotions? Does strong mean nothing ever affects you? If we look at the instances of the prophets, I don't think this really holds true. You know, Allah knows this, but that doesn't seem to hold true for me. They felt hurt, they felt betrayal sometimes, but they had the faith and the strength to move through it. So what this makes you wonder is that it actually takes a huge amount of strength to face our emotions and to face our difficulties. I think, Surya, it's much, much easier to repress our emotions and to sweep them under the carpet and pretend it doesn't exist. Unfortunately, this leads to more issues because these repressions, from a psychological and emotional perspective, begin to run our decisions and our life in unconscious ways. So the first thing I want to do is to urge your listeners to understand that there's nothing wrong with feeling hurt. I don't think any of us can say that we have gotten to this point in our lives without being deeply hurt by another person. The question is, how do we deal with it then? It can feel very satisfying to just lash out at that person, but that causes more problems. So I'm gonna go quite in depth with this. So if the listeners want to take a few points, please do so. I also want to say I will be uploading videos onto my YouTube channel to discuss exactly this issue, as it's a very common one and can feel very difficult to navigate. So we've all been in situations where we've been betrayed, where we've been targeted, where we've been slandered, been gossiped about, falsely accused, and so on. So at some point, we would have fit into one of those categories. It's really an awful place to be in. There's so much hurt, we don't even know where to begin. So how do we begin the process of overcoming from it and healing from it? So the first step, number one, is the process of three A's. I call it the three A's. Acknowledge, allow, and accept. So acknowledge what you are feeling. Allow yourself to feel whatever you're feeling. This is probably the most important part, Surya. We often want to rush this part. We want to be the bigger person, we want to make marks, we don't want to work through the emotions. You know we need to be the bigger person, but we're just not there yet. And when we try to rush the process, we end up building a lot of resentment, and at some point this spills over and then we have a big conflict with that person. So when we do respond to this person, we bring all this emotional baggage that further fuels the drama and the conflict. So the first thing is give yourself permission to feel. Don't judge yourself or condemn yourself for feeling. You may feel like, I'm a terrible human being, I'm a terrible Muslim. It doesn't make you a bad person or less of a human being. It's normal to feel. This doesn't mean, however, that you're going to act from these emotions. On the contrary, this is the time for you to do some reflection. Most of the time, when someone attacks us, we immediately have that knee-jerk reaction that I spoke about earlier, and we react to them and further fuel the conflict. In this instance, we're going to do some taskiya, some introspection before any action is taken. So rather than reacting, take time to sit and write. I know this is very strange advice, but this is where you're going to do your breathing and you're going to do your writing it out. There's actually solid research in this field, and it shows that simply writing about emotional upheavals for 15 minutes for 4 consecutive days can decrease anxiety, your depressive symptoms, and boost your immune system. So I want you, so what the listeners need to do is identify exactly what you are feeling. Write it all out. If you want to write a letter to this person, go ahead and write that. Put whatever you want there, but you're never going to send that letter and no one is ever going to see it, so they can even burn it if they need to. This is simply an exercise to help you begin the process of healing and identifying what you are feeling so that you can do the next step of the process, which is step 2. You need to question why you feel this way. What are the thoughts that are supporting these emotions? So I'm going to give a quick example here. Say, for example, you have your partner, and you, for you, anniversaries or birthdays or whatever it is a very, very important, significant thing. But now, your partner forgets your anniversary. So, you know, you let the day pass, and by the end of the day, you are boiling over with anger and irritation. And during the day, you may have made up all kinds of stories in your head. What happens is the brain is an amazing mechanism. When it has incomplete information, it will fill in the blanks with its imagination and its fears and its insecurities. So you'll make up all kinds of things in your head. So the first thing is you'll feel sad, you'll feel angry, you'll feel rejected, you'll feel disappointed, insignificant, unacknowledged. And then you may make up things in your head like, he doesn't care about me. He doesn't care enough to make an effort. He doesn't think I'm important enough in his life. You may even start going 10 steps ahead and saying, maybe he has somebody else who's interested in me. Maybe I've gotten too fat and he doesn't think I'm attractive anymore. And you may make up all kinds of stories in your head. And by the time you approach your husband, who may just have forgotten, that's the only reason, you come with all this baggage about it. So our brain makes stories. It makes assumptions about what's really going on. So question, how many of these thoughts that are supporting your emotions, how many of them are based on fact, and how much of this is based on assumption, on fear, on insecurity? Like I said, very often our minds will run away with itself, and it will do so in a way that's consistent with our fears and our triggers. And this is how you find your triggers. So the self-inquiry process is absolute gold in terms of conflict resolution and emotional growth. Rather than being embarrassed by your emotions, they become guiding posts that will help you find the areas in which you are ready to shift and grow. Okay. Now, this process may seem very time-consuming and arduous, so I want to quickly read something to you from a renowned researcher. Her name is Brené Brown. She writes so well on this topic. And she says about this internal introspection, maybe by now you're thinking, I don't want to do this. It seems like a lot of work. I get it. Walking into our stories can feel dangerous and foreboding, and what we ultimately confront is ourselves. The most difficult part of our stories is often what we bring into them, what we make up about who we are and how we are perceived by others. Yes, maybe we lost our job or screwed up a project, but what makes that story so painful is what we tell ourselves about our own self-worth and value. And this, Surya, brings me to the last step. Are these thoughts, is the story that you're basing on the situation of this person hurting you, is this being used as a definition of your self-worth? The unfortunate truth is that sometimes there will be parts where we are wrong, where we are to blame and we've inflicted pain. How well we can move forward from this will depend on how honest we can be with ourselves through the self-inquiry process. And how honest we can be depends on how much self-compassion we can bring into the process. And like I said earlier, it's important to note that no matter how good your intentions, no matter how much emotional maturity you bring to a conflict, another person can only understand you at their own level of consciousness. The best you can do is act with integrity and truth through it. Once you've done this internal work of wading through your emotions, your assumptions, your fears, and your stories, now is the time to decide if and how you would like to respond. And if you do respond, you'll now be able to do so in a far more compassionate and authentic way.
It's actually it makes sense when you're looking at the whole thing, because if you look at going through each of these things, so you identify your emotion and then you question whether it's actually fact or it's just your own fear, right? Mm-hmm. And you're going through this, and I'm just thinking of like general, like a conflict you would have. I'm sure, I'm almost 100% sure that if you have to sit and do this, most of the times your reaction after that would be much more, I would say, neutral or objective than just, you know, lashing out in an instant.
You're 100% correct. So yeah, I actually think if listeners took the time to do this, you'll find that most of the time you won't even bother to respond, because you'll find that what that person triggered in you was actually something that you needed to shift on and heal from. And once you do that, your need to even respond goes away. There will be times where you do need to respond. There are times sometimes where we do need to implement our boundaries and be truthful, but you'll be able to do it in a far less defensive way. You'll be able to do it in a more compassionate way. You'll be able to do it in a more respectful way. And because you will come from a much calmer, much less reactive space, the other person will be far more open to whatever feedback you give them.
Yes, that makes sense. But now, Zada, see if what if this is the conflict is not something that's just, you know, I feel like this is something maybe that happens to you once in a while, or what if it's something that's silly, like say you invited for a function, okay, and everyone is there, and say one person in the function has a problem with you. So you're a strong person and you're a positive person and you have a positive outlook in life, and then you attend and there's a whole group of people, but there's one person that may be out there to just make you look make you feel out of place. And so you go with a positive outlook, but because of the person's action, it's actually, it's affecting you. Although you went out strong, you went out focused, and you know, you were ready for it. But now this person say, like a silly thing, like maybe the person just ignores you and speaks to everyone else around you. So, and every time you start to speak, the person just gets up and walks away. So it's like, it's something that's directly in your face kind of thing. Would you also do this because now you're in that situation? How then do you react?
Good question, because that's where it happens most of the time. So I would say in that situation, you can use the same process once you go home. But in that situation, what do you do? I would do the same thing. Even if you need to go into the bathroom and kind of take some deep breaths in and out and start to just get to grapple. So go through the same inquiry process. Even if you don't take out a notebook, just take 5 minutes in that bathroom to take a deep breath in and out and say, okay, what is going on here? So do some self-talk with yourself. Ask yourself, what is going on here? This person is ignoring me. I don't like it. How is it making me feel? So you might come up with some answers and say, I feel insignificant. I feel rejected. I am being made to feel small. I feel angry and I want to lash out at this person. I feel resentful. Why are they being like this? I feel confused. I don't know where this is coming from. Start identifying all the emotions. Now start asking yourself, okay, the person is ignoring me. They're rejecting me. What am I thinking about this? Well, maybe I'm thinking that they don't like me. Okay, maybe they don't like me. What does that mean? Do I need to be upset about this? Do I need to say something to them? Do I need to... Start exploring this thing. Start inquiring within yourself. I'll give you an example of what happened to me a while ago, a couple of years ago actually. The building that I live in, there's a lady, there's a building manager, and she's a lovely lady. And, you know, usually, at, you know, whenever we see each other, we greet each other, we have a bit of a chat. And then one day I started noticing that she started to become very offish towards me. And my mind immediately started concocting stories, you know. And I thought, okay, your mind starts to look for reasons. So you think, okay, maybe she's angry with me about this, or maybe she didn't like what I said the last time, or maybe she felt I didn't extend to her in a way that somebody else extended to her. And, you know, you start looking for all these things. Either way, I left it. I didn't probe too much into it. My, you know, gut instinct was just leave it. One day I walked in, this happened for a while, and one day I walked in and she burst into tears, and I asked her what happened, and she told me her daughter had received a diagnosis of cancer, of terminal cancer. And it suddenly brought the realization that she was going through her own personal thing, and I was making it completely about me. And I thought to myself, imagine if I took it up with her and I got funny with her and I stopped greeting her because I took this whole thing personally when it actually had nothing to do with me. So something to also remember is that very often people are going through things that we know nothing about. And we're taking it very personally. A lot of things just have nothing to do with that. So maybe some, you know, as a listener, you can even put it up there. I tell this to my clients sometimes. A lot of things are just not about us. It's just not about you.
Yes. Definitely. And sometimes I think we take things personally and we think it's about us. And it's most of the time that the person is actually going through some difficulty in their lives so deeply, and we make the situation worse by our reaction to it.
Yes, definitely. So like I said, I could have gone to the building manager. I could have done a number of things. I could have started gossiping about her to the other people in the building, which would have, you know, just made things worse for myself. I could have approached her and told her, what's wrong with you? You've got a real attitude problem. Or I could have done any number of things which would have caused a lot of conflict between the two of us that was completely unnecessary. So I think also just to remember that some of it is just not about you. What is about you is how much of that triggers you. So if you make up stories about it that this person doesn't like me and they think I'm not good enough and all of this stuff, the fact is that we are also, sometimes we have to just come to grips with the fact that we are not everybody's cup of tea. Everybody is not going to like you. And if your primary purpose is in life is to make sure that everybody likes you, then life is going to be pretty miserable and difficult for you.
Definitely. I think that's such a profound thing you said. You are not everybody's cup of tea. Some people just don't like you because that's just them. And I think you have to reach a stage in your life where you accept that and move on.
But you can only do that, Surya, if you have a good sense of self-worth. If your self-worth is poor, you will be looking for every single person to approve of you and to like you. And that's when you will become very oversensitive to what everyone says and make up a lot of stories about it. So the stronger your self-worth is, the more secure you are in yourself, the less you need other people to approve of you, and the more you will be okay of it when people sometimes just don't like you.
Yes, yes, definitely. And you get those people. I really admire them. You know, those strong personality types that would say, I don't give a damn. You know, it's okay. You know, I love and approve of myself, and that's it. And I think that to reach that stage, you have to be very, very secure in yourself.
Well, I think to remember the whole self-inquiry process that I explained earlier. This will actually build your self-esteem. It'll actually build your self-worth. And there are other ways that you can do it as well. But to remember that it comes down to you and it comes down to your self-worth, and that's what you bring to the experience. However, this is not also an excuse to just have bad behavior with everyone and just say, well, this is the way I am and I love myself. As long as you're being true to yourself, you're being respectful, you're staying in your integrity, and then from that space, if people choose not to like you, being okay with that. That's what it's really about.
Yes, definitely. And going back, so you said if something has to happen on the spur of the moment at the function, and obviously you can't go home and deal with it, you go into the bathroom or you take a few deep breaths and you understand, okay, this person is being whatever, offish or anything. And say, okay, right, you've dealt with everything, you leave the bathroom. How then do you approach it?
Okay. So you've done that, you've already calmed yourself through, and in that process you will have probably picked up a few things that you need to let go of. So you might realize that you have certain fears or insecurities. It'll depend on the situation. But also we tend to, as human beings, we tend to focus on whatever is going wrong in the moment. So you'll find that if there were 9 people at the function that were being nice to you and one person that was ignoring you, we'll tend to just focus all our attention and energy on the one person and trying to get them to be nicer to us. So there's other people there. There's other people at the function who are being nice to you and are not being horrible. Go ahead, engage in those conversations. Make the best of it. Redirect your focus to what is good in the moment, what is positive in the moment. Another thing that I like to do here is before I go to anything, whether it's a function or anything like that, beforehand, I actually mentally prep myself. And I, you know, clients have tried this out and it's worked beautifully for them as well, alhamdulillah. Mentally prep yourself about how you would like to feel at the end of the function. So prep yourself and tell yourself, okay, maybe you want to feel content, maybe you want to feel happy, maybe you want to feel happy about the way you've, you know, conducted yourself. And just focus on those feelings and focus on how that emotion feels in your body. And before you go into that function, carry that with yourself. And when you feel yourself being thrown a bit off course by that person who is offish, go do your bathroom exercise and come out again and again reconnect with that feeling. And like I said, refocus your attention to the other people who might be very happy to have your company there.
Yes, definitely. I find that I do this quite often, but I don't actually say how I would feel at the end of the function. But generally, when I do attend a place, I always go already mentally prepping myself that I'm going to go there with an open mind and enjoy myself and not let things get to me and be the best that I can be and give my life to others. And I do it unconsciously. It's not something I've been taught. But now that you mentioned it, I do it quite often, so I think it does help.
Alhamdulillah, it does, it does. And you, I'm sure you have reaped the benefits of it as well.
Yeah, definitely, 100%. You end up giving your best off to people, and you come back feeling very positive.
And then you attract a lot less negativity and drama as well, because if you're in a negative space and negative mood, you're just going to end up attracting more drama and conflict to yourself.
Definitely. I agree 100%. And I think your focus and your outlook is very important. But I guess either all of these things is, it takes a lot of work, and it is a journey, an unfolding journey that you're going to go through. And the only way you go through it is by being honest with yourself. So inshallah, I hope that all the listeners can use all of these tips to better themselves, better their relationships, and, you know, find themselves. Because I think it's beautiful once you find yourself. There's so much more to explore and to unlock. So Zaida, I thank you so much for being on the show once again. It's always a pleasure chatting to you. I would like to do a program on jealousy, anxiety, fear. I think we haven't covered it as yet, but inshallah soon I would love you to join us again. Jazakallah so much for being on the show.
Inshallah, I look forward to being on again. Jazakallah khair for having me. It's been a pleasure to be on.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Okay, so there you have it. That was Zaida Mohammadi, life coach and body talk practitioner. Alhamdulillah, always positive, always giving you so much to think about and so much to work through. And I've definitely written down her tips, and I'm definitely going to try them out. I think that they are invaluable, and definitely going to get the book. I think most those of you that enjoy reading and love motivational books, you should look for the book, The Four Agreements, I think it was. It was by Don Miguel, but I will get the details from Zaida again and post it. If you have any queries, please call me, or you can email me on suraya@radioislamlive.com. Until next week, Tuesday, fi amanillah, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.